Support for The Slow Melt comes from Audible.com, home of a diverse selection of digital audiobooks for your phone, e-reader, or MP3 player. Get a free 30-day trial and any audiobook of your choice for free, including a book written by our host, Simran Sethi. Bread, Wine, Chocolate, The Slow Loss of Foods We Love highlights changes in food told through the experience of flavor and stories of chocolate, beer, bread, wine, and coffee, and includes tasting guides to help you better navigate craft chocolate. Give it a taste at audibletrial.com/chocolate. Welcome to the Slow Melt Makers Series. I'm Simran Sethi, and today I'm speaking with Carlos Ignacio Velasco, the co-founder of Cacao Hunters, based in Popayan, Colombia. Carlos, I am so excited to talk to you for a number of reasons, but the most personal one is that when I was in Bogota, I purchased your chocolate bars, and I brought them back to the United States and had a chance to really enjoy them. And very soon after, a few days later, my father passed away. And so I think of my time with those chocolate bars from Cacao Hunters as being like the before time, like a really happy time. So thank you for being a part of that.
Thank you, Simran. It's a real honor and pleasure to be here with you today.
I wonder if we could go all the way back and if you could tell me how you learned to love chocolate.
That's a great question. I come from coffee industry. That was my first career after graduating from college. And it always surprised me how Colombia, being right in the middle of the specialty cocoa countries like Venezuela, Ecuador, and lately Peru, were being recognized internationally for producing high-end cacaos or specialty cacaos, and Colombia was not part of that group. And I was living in Japan at the time. So with that, just that small hint and idea, I decided to found Cacao de Colombia, which is the company name that makes Cacao Hunter chocolates. And I was lucky enough really soon after to meet Mayumi Ogata, my chocolate partner, my business partner. She had a lot of expertise on cacao and chocolate, and I invited her to visit Colombia to help me assess whether that idea that I had that Colombia had at some extent a hidden treasure in terms of cacao. We came to Colombia, and I started to learn through her or from her how to taste cacao. So my first experience with the product was via the fruit itself. Let's remember that cacao comes from the seed of a tree, right? And it's the fruit what you use for fermenting and helps to develop the flavors that you would later have on the chocolate. But not many people do it, and probably no one did it at that time. But by tasting the fruit, you can imagine and picture how you will develop that into chocolate. That was my first experience through her on really starting evaluating and falling in love with this amazing product.
Did you eat a lot of chocolate when you were growing up?
Well, Colombia is a market very strong in terms of producing chocolate. We are producing about 50,000 metric tons of cacao, which is not small. And most of it, or I would say all of it until recently, was transformed into low-end chocolate bars. So we grew up with that, a little bit like what had happened with coffee. We all grew in Colombia, being told that we produce the best coffee in the world, but we were drinking the really low quality that was not exported. Something similar happened with chocolate. The quality of the cacao that left the farm was really low, despite having some of the best genetics on the field, but just the post-harvesting was not done properly. So I would say I was a chocolate eater, but not in the way I'm now. I didn't understand a lot of things, and the type of product that we were that we had available in Colombia wouldn't give us the possibility to really go deep into the flavors or the traceability or the producers behind the product.
So when you first tasted a higher quality chocolate made from Colombian cocoa, can you describe what that experience was like?
I would have to say the first time I tasted that, it came from our chocolate factory. and we, in a way, pioneered this high-end or specialty cacao industry in Colombia. Soon after, Mayumi came to the Sierra Nevada. That's one of the regions in the northern part of Colombia where we started our work. We started working with producers on how we could improve the quality. And just like with grapes, to make wine, if you don't post-harvest cacao in the proper manner, you will never have a great chocolate. So we started buying the fruit from the cacao producers. And at the small place that we rented out in the region, we were fermenting them, the fruit in the wooden boxes. And then we started making, you know, with really small lab equipment, our first bar. And we were really amazed by the type of quality that we could achieve. At that time, we were also trying to understand what the world was producing in terms of quality, and the type of flavor that we were able to get from Sierra Nevada was really similar to what Madagascar was producing. And that's one of the best chocolate bars that I had ever tasted before in my short experience with chocolate. So for me, having the training for coffee, for food tasting, which, you know, once you have it for one product, it's easy to adapt it to others, I was really thrilled by the amount of flavors and aromas and how similar it was to one of the best chocolate bars that I had tasted before. So it was something amazing that told us, well, this is something that where we can spend, you know, our lives and dedicate our lives to really transform this industry in Colombia that has so much potential.
You're sitting in your chocolate factory right now, which is the best place for me to be talking to you. I love it. And I wonder, there are so many terms that are used to describe this emerging movement of more specialized cacao and chocolate. How do you define the company?
You know, coming from the coffee industry, I like to also adopt a lot of terms that are used on that industry that in a way has had the opportunity to be more developed than the chocolate industry in terms of specialized products. And I think the first important term to clarify for everyone in the industry is the term of fine flavor cacao, which is used a lot in the industry. And for instance, Colombia is recognized as a fine flavor cacao producer, but that's just what you get on the tree, right? It's only until you do the proper post-harvesting, fermentation and drying for that fine flavor cacao that you can really get a specialty cacao.
Right.
And that's the beginning for a high-end chocolate. So first, we are a specialty cacao manufacturer. So we work directly with the producers that produce fine flavor cacaos and heirloom cacaos. And we also have our own post-harvesting central in the northern part of Colombia. And in terms of the chocolate making, I think we will define ourselves as craft chocolatiers in the sense that we work with small batches. Mm-hmm. So we really pay attention to details. So for us, few kilos of cacao, specialty cacao, can become a chocolate bar. So on that regard, we're a craft chocolate company, but we adopt the standards from the larger industry. And I think that's a big difference from us and from other, let's say, bean-to-bar chocolate makers. That's thank you to Mayumi, again. She worked for many years at a large chocolate factory in Japan. So we are, you know, based in Colombia, in Popayan, a small town on the south of the country. But we have really high standards of production. Japan is one of our main markets. That's where we started selling our products. So we want to create a brand that can enter really highly specialized markets.
And it's really reflected in the chocolate itself, from the wrapper all the way through, of course, to its contents, that this is a well-considered bar. And you say that even though 70% of total cocoa production in Colombia is comprised of fine varieties, 96% of Colombian cocoa production has been those low-end products that you were mentioning earlier. And that puts into motion a cycle in which people really can't escape poverty. The cocoa prices are depressed, the productivity of the cocoa is low, and this cycle of poverty in the cocoa farming communities continues. And so the regions where cocoa is grown are some of the poorest in the country, and they have a significant shortage of basic services and are still facing the effects of armed conflict. So if you could talk a little bit about that, this story sets you apart from so many other makers in the world.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Simran. And without the cocoa producers behind our chocolate bars, we couldn't do anything. And it's clear for us that unless they are successful on what they're doing, we cannot be successful on what we're doing. We're exactly a part of the same chain, of the same team. Colombia, as you mentioned, has been going through an armed conflict for many, many years. And I always try to look at the positive side of things. If you go to an area like Tumaco, that's right south of Colombia on the border with Ecuador. Ecuador on the other side of the border, on the other side of the river, that didn't have this kind of conflict. They were really lucky in that sense. They replaced a lot of their cacao for high yield hybrids, which in a way, I mean, is great for the producer if they can increase their productivity. But on this side of the border in Colombia, a lot of cacaos or genetics that have been present for thousands of years were untouched, hidden on the jungle, like treasures waiting to be found. And that's why we started focusing on the first place in regions, again, like Tumaco and the Sierra Nevada, both bordering countries with Venezuela and Ecuador, that had on their lands hidden because of, you know, the conflict that started 500 years ago when the Spaniards first came to Colombia, and, you know, that triggered, you know, a lot of events through history that have us where we stand now. But going to your question, in a region like Tumaco, cacao has become a crop through which producers can become confident again. They can start dreaming again. They can have something that really make us, you know, think of tomorrow, right? It's a product that connects very well with their culture. Coffee, for instance, in Colombia was imported from Africa a couple of hundred years ago. Cacao has been in these lands for thousands of years before the people from Tumaco arrived into Tumaco. So it's something that connects very well to the culture. To give you an idea of what we do in terms of sourcing, we pay a high price for the producers that is stable over time. We not only transform their cacao into our nice chocolate bars, but we also try to partner up with high-end chocolate makers throughout the world that share a similar vision and passion for the industry as we do. And through that partnership, we can buy larger amounts from regions that, you know, over the few years that we've been doing this work, have been able to increase the quality of their crop. So the impact that we're having, I think, is huge. We had investment from Acumen Fund, which is a impact fund out of the US. They invested in us in 2015 because of the work we're doing in these regions. They just finished a impact analysis, trying to assess, you know, what is it that we're doing. And one of the things that producers liked the most from working with us is that they could receive a stable high price. If you're a producer or a farmer, you are the one person or link in the chain that's exposed to the highest risks. You have your crop depending on the weather conditions that change so much recently. And the fact that in many cases, these producers are the ones that experience the most risk in the chain and that the work is not recognized and valued as it should, creates a lot of pressure for them to stop doing that. And that's when you start reading, you know, on the news also that cacao is going to extinguish sometime in the near future. So for us, creating this sense of, how do you say it, allowing producers to plan over time. Okay, I now invest in my farm, I increase my productivity, I know that I can increase my quality because I know that I have a company that is willing to buy from us our product at a high price if we can produce the quality over time. That guarantee is one of the key elements to really start transforming the industry. We need producers of cacao in Colombia to be quite successful, to understand our business model, to be connected to the consumers. Over the last couple of years, we've invited producers from the regions we worked at to Japan to meet with the consumers, to meet the market, to see why we insist so much into the importance of quality. It's not something that we're making up. It's the key to access this type of markets. I know that I went in many places from your question, but it just gave me, you know, the seed to talk about of the aspects of what our company is doing, Simran.
No, I think what you've shared is so important for chocolate lovers to understand. Is there anything else that you wish they knew about chocolate and chocolate making?
Well, I think the most important element here is understanding that chocolate comes from cacao. For us, it sounds evident, but many people don't know it. If consumers have that understanding, then we're in the good track for developing this new industry. This industry we're all in is sustainable only if consumers understand that a chocolate bar that is helping producers in the way that we just mentioned, that is being transformed into chocolate, adding the minimum possible extra products so we get the maximum flavor from the cacao and the terroir. And if consumers have that understanding and have a willingness to pay a bit more for that, then we will really create impact and transform the industry. We're in the beginning. I know a few years have passed already, but I'm thinking, you know, in the way the coffee industry has developed and the awareness that consumers have when they go and pick coffee from their favorite coffee bar in so many places in the world.
They'll pick their favorite chocolate in the same way, we hope. Tell us a little bit about your operation. You said you're just still early on.
We have about 25 people employed at our company. And we have in Colombia people working at three different cities. We have people on the field. We run a program called Escuela de Cacao or Cacao School, where we train producers mainly on the harvesting and post-harvesting so we can keep up the high quality. And we have people at our factory here that are, you know, both on the admin side and the production side. This is a rural area, many of them commuting over an hour by motorcycle from their coffee farms to work at our factory. Chocolate has such a great energy when, you know, everyone's so committed. So the place where we work at is fabulous. I wish I could spend some more time here at the factory.
I want to say a special thank you to them because I've been staring at this chocolate bar that we will be trying shortly, and I'm very grateful to them for what they do.
This podcast is brought to you by Rotar Chocolate Machines, a chocolate grinder designed and built by a chocolate maker for chocolate makers and made in the United States. Get all of the details at www.rotar.com. This episode is also brought to you by Blue Apron, the meal delivery service that works directly with artisanal purveyors and family-run farms to bring meals to your door. Get $30 off your first order, plus free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/chocolate.
So here we are. I'm looking at this Arhuaco 72% heirloom cacao bar grown by the Arhuaco people of Sierra Nevada.
This bar, Simran, I think this is a great pick. We recently launched, end of last year, our heirloom collection. When we started our work, we knew that there was a huge potential to develop origins in Colombia for cacao. Then we went a step farther and we said, okay, some cacao has been introduced from elsewhere, but let's concentrate on those heirloom regional varieties that grow in these regions. So we started, you know, selecting just those cocoa trees that we knew that were local. And our first bar from that heirloom line was the Arhuaco 72%. That is a result of over 5 years of work with the Arhuacos community in Sierra Nevada. Just to give you a little bit of background on who they're the descendants from the Taironas. The Taironas were in Sierra Nevada when the Spaniards came to Americas over 500 years ago. And they were growing cacao at the time. A lot of people have in their mind that cacao comes from Mexico and Central America. Before it reached Central America, it passed via the Sierra Nevada, which is right, you know, on the connection between South and Central America. And all these people were trading via cacao. They had exchange of goods. And the Taironas, probably as the Aztecas and other cultures, had similar types of usage of cacao. The problem that we have with the Taironas is that they never left any written proof of that. But the proof that was left were these very old trees on the mountain that we found. So we started talking to the Arhuaco leaders, the mamos, as they're called in their language, trying to understand if for them it was interesting to work on rescuing this really important piece of heritage and their culture. And they agree. So they started working with us on this process of hiking the mountain for weeks in the search of the lost tree of white cacaos. And 5 years later, after starting this work, we managed to get the first chocolate bar from this cacao. And to our surprise, Simran, it was awarded first in New York and then in London by the International Chocolate Awards with a gold award for the best microbatch chocolate. So you can imagine what it meant to us, you know, being a company that had been making chocolates just for over a couple of years, being able to reach this type of recognition meant a lot, because it was like the final proof that we needed to say, okay, here in Colombia we have something really amazing. And it meant a lot more for the producers in the region.
How did they respond?
The first thing we did as soon as we received the award was to travel to the region and give it to them. That was their award, something that we were doing together. And they're highly proud of it. Now the younger generations are interested in growing cacao on their lands. This is a group of people that just won't grow anything on their lands unless it's related to the culture and it helps to preserve the environment. Cacao has a great advantage as a crop, and is that it can be a productive forest. For instance, if you go to Tumaco, Sierra Nevada, you find cacao trees growing in the middle of the rainforest. So it's a highly environmental crop. So it fit really well with the culture and with their agricultural practices. They have, you know, adopted cacao as one of the crops they want to focus on as a community. And we see the volumes increasing, which is great, because it means that, you know, more resources go into this community that has a really basic, you know, earning model. Probably when you visited Colombia, you saw the craft shop, some of the Arhuaco bags. But I would say cacao, because it comes from the land, has a lot stronger connection than any other product that is produced by them.
That's a beautiful story. I'm going to start to open it. And as I do, I would love to know what story you're trying to also tell through the packaging, because it's quite beautiful.
Thank you. You can pick some of the Japanese elements from, mm-hmm. you know, from our group, and you see the box doesn't have any glue on it. We call it an origami box, inspired on the origami tradition of folding paper. So it's we want to share a story. So on the front of the packaging, you see some designs. These designs in gold come from what they make on their bags. And once you open the box, you find the face of Hernan and Francisco, two of the brothers in the Arhuacos we work with. They are our close friends. We've been doing this project with for years, and we share a little bit of more of the story. And of course, the final piece that we want to share is once you open the foil and you have the dark chocolate bar inside.
Exactly, which I have finally climbed the mountain and arrived at the dark chocolate bar, the beautiful, beautiful dark chocolate bar. I love, you know, that's something I love so much. There's no moment when you're not telling the story. Even on the bar itself is the Cacao Hunter's name and the logo, the small embossing of a cacao pod. So you've really tried to continue a narrative from the moment you reach for the bar all the way through to actually holding the chocolate.
Correct. And we hope this just to be the beginning, right? Yeah. We hope consumers to engage into this and hopefully one day come and visit us and visit the producers directly.
Gosh, I don't know who wouldn't jump at that invitation, myself included. So, okay, we'll plan that.
That would be amazing.
I am now holding this beautiful piece of chocolate in front of my face, in front of my nose specifically. And tell me, what flavor should we be looking for? What do you want me to find right now?
Remember, this is a 72% chocolate bar. It's already, you know, a dark chocolate bar. And I think what struck mainly the judges that awarded this bar with the gold award was the high citrus flavor, like lemongrass, I would say, that is really rare for a dark chocolate to have. So if you break a small piece or of the bar and put it in your mouth and let it melt, the reason why our bar is so thin, Simran, is so it can easily melt in your mouth. And it's only when it melts, right, that you can actually start getting the whole picture of how a chocolate bar tastes.
If you insist, yes. It's in my mouth. It's starting to melt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting some of that lemongrass. Also, really so, nice lime.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice blend of this citrusness and sweetness at the same time. It's not bitter at all. Mm-hmm. You know, especially it happens a lot here in Colombia that they call dark chocolate bitter chocolate, chocolate amargo. Like it had to be bitter if it's dark, right? And so here we don't find that bitterness. It's a really nice combination of flavors. And I think it lasts for long, right? It sort of invites you to break another piece from the chocolate bar and put it in your mouth. Or if you're generous enough to share it with friends. I don't know if that will happen very often, but that's the idea.
I'm terribly selfish when it comes to chocolate. You know, I don't get amargo, I don't get bitter, but there is also this nice little, which I don't notice a lot of times, astringente. Like there's a little bit of astringency here, like a slight drying. When you mentioned it lasts a long time, I'm still tasting the chocolate, and I'm also getting like a really nice sense of texture with this little bit of astringency. So that's really interesting.
It is, and here we have to remind ourselves that this cacao, Simran, before it reaches our hands, and it starts the fermentation at our central in the region, it's traveled for over 10 hours by mule.
Wow.
From all over the mountain. So the fermentation in a way has started already. Mm-hmm. During this long journey. And it has, I'm sure it has to do something with the flavor that we're picking, because this bar is so different from, if you take our heirloom line of one of our bars from the lower part of Sierra Nevada, it's so different. So here we have the genetics of this heirloom cacao together with the way it is transported, for sure.
I love hearing the stories of your chocolate and reading about them, and I'm really glad that you include that information in every one of the bars. Can you tell us a little bit about your decision to include just, I mean, it's three ingredients. It's the cocoa mass itself, it's sugar, and it's a little bit of additional cocoa butter. Does that extend for all of your chocolates?
On our heirloom line, it does. We are even trying to not use added cocoa butter. The reason why we add it, it's sometimes because, you know, certain cacaos naturally don't have enough cocoa butter in it, but it might be necessary in order to mold it. Mm-hmm. But we try to keep that as the minimum possible. We're trying, Simran, now to make 100% cocoa chocolate bar from this same region, from these same producers. And it turned out to be amazing. It's probably going to be my favorite once we start like really making it. We have an 82% chocolate bar from Tumaco that doesn't have butter added. On our professional line, we also make our chocolate bars for pâtissier, you know, as a handle, as a coverture. For that type of products, we use butter because it's important for the chef, you know, to be able to handle the product. But if it's just, you know, to bite, you don't need to add much. The less you add, the better, I would say.
That's a good advice for life, I think. Less is more. Okay, so we've talked, of course, quite a bit about your chocolate, and I would love to end with any sort of reflection that you have on another maker's chocolate. Are there any makers locally or internationally that you're really enjoying right now?
Well, thank you for asking that. And as I mentioned before, we have a lot of contact with other chocolate makers in the US, in Europe, in Japan, mm-hmm. because we understood that we cannot by ourselves transform this industry in Colombia. We will need the help of other chocolate makers that share this passion to buy specialty cocoa beans from us. So that we can keep on increasing our impact in the regions we're at. One of these companies is Original Beans, based out of Amsterdam, although their chocolates are made in Switzerland. And they visited us a few weeks ago, and they brought their 100% Chuncho bar from Cusco. And it is said that Cusco is the region in the world with the highest biodiversity for cacao. It's probably considered as the epicenter for where cacao first grew in the world. And that bar was just amazing. I love one that Dandelion, for instance, that's from Ecuador. Mm-hmm. Greg was here a few months ago, and he brought it, and I also loved it.
Greg from Dandelion, who does much of their cacao sourcing.
Exactly. We work with Uncommon Cacao. They import specialty cacaos from different parts of the world, specializing in Americas. We distribute via them our specialty cacaos for the U.S. market, and that way we again, you know, have access to a lot more chocolate makers. But going back to the question of the bar, I will have to say this Chuncho bar from Original Beans I really liked, and I hope you also have the opportunity to taste it one day.
Fantastic. I'm adding it to my list. Last question. Is there anything that you would want someone who's up and coming in making chocolate to know about chocolate making? Is there anything you wish you'd known?
Well, I think not knowing much is sometimes an advantage, right? Because it allows you to come into the industry with a completely fresh and unbiased view. But I would say, this is probably an advice for entrepreneurs as a whole. Never let yourself be stopped by the lack of resources. Many cases we say, okay, we don't have enough cash to start this project. But any idea where there is an entrepreneur willing to put the hard work and commitment and focus to make it a reality, there will be people willing to support it with resources that lack in the beginning. So I always had that idea that it was possible. We started making chocolate at a garage. My mom, she has a pastry shop here in Popayán, and she allowed me to use a small corner on her factory to set up our first chocolate machines. And I think it's important. I mean, in the U.S. is well known. A lot of Silicon Valley unicorns have started out in a garage.
Exactly.
So I think it was
and help from mom. Like somehow or another, it's the garage and mom coming together.
That's a great combination.
Yeah.
But I think the important thing here, you know, it's to understand that we have to bring something that consumers and the producers can have a change, right? And I think we have the great opportunity by being in a cocoa producing country to have a really close relationship with producers and a really close relationship with consumers, and understand that we have to benefit the lives of both, and in a way help to transform both if we want our product to be successful. And I would say to whomever wants to start a new chocolate factory, is experiment, right? I think this industry has been doing things the same way for too many years. And I think we need fresh ideas on how, you know, make great new products that will help also the industry to grow and everyone benefit from it. So don't be intimidated by the lack of knowledge that you might think you have, and experiment, and reach out to us anytime that you want to talk to someone who's been through it already.
Muchas gracias, Carlos, for these insights and for your generosity of spirit. That's really great.
No, thank you. Thank you for allowing us to be here. It's really an honor.
Podcast listeners, you can learn more about Cacao Hunters on their website, cacaohunters.com, and use the code SLOWMELT to get a discount on their line of chocolates. You can also order the Maker Series Tasting Pack, featuring every one of the bars that we're tasting in this series, exclusively through chocolopolis.com. Check our website, theslowmelt.com, for all details, dates of the promotion, and discount information. To hear shows on the factors that create and enhance flavors in chocolate, and on what makes chocolate so alluring, go to our website or find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and other podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Slow Melt. The Slow Melt Maker Series is mixed and produced by Katie Ranke with guidance from Sean Corey Campbell, and written and edited by me, Simran Sethi, with support from Sasha Woodruff. Our title track, Soldier, is written and performed by The Slackers. Join us week after next for a Maker Series episode featuring Kylo Chocolate and another yummy tasting session. And if you like what you're hearing, please tell your friends, consider giving us a review or donating, and subscribe through your favorite podcast app. Choco love, and thanks for your support.